Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Now that Republicans have sorted out their leadership of Congress, what should we expect over the next 2 years? Let's get to the bottom line. It wasn't pretty, but it was democracy in action. The most conservative wing of the Republican Party was able to delay the election of the Speaker of the House of Representatives 15 times. As far as parliamentary fights around the world go, that's not too bad. But for America, it rarely happens. It was pretty historic. After about a week, Congressman Kevin McCarthy had made enough backdoor deals with members of the Freedom Caucus to win them over and pick up the Speaker's gavel. Now the new Congress elected last November can start its work. McCarthy promised to bring back the America First agenda and to make immigration and wokeness top priorities. He's also set up a committee to look into the weaponization of government agencies, like the Internal Revenue Service, which collects taxes. So what does that mean for Americans and the rest of the world? And what will U.S. politics look like as we head to the presidential elections of 2024? Today, we're talking with Republican strategist Rena Shaw, a former aide to two members of Congress and a delegate to the 2016 Republican National Convention, and Tim Constantine, former Republican politician and now a columnist for the Washington Times newspaper and the host of the Capitol Hill Show based here in Washington. Thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Thanks,
we've all been riveted this last week. Now people hardly remember it, but they've all been riveted to 15 ballots for the Speaker of the House, Tim. And I would just love to know, what does the difficulty that Kevin McCarthy had in achieving the speakership mean for America and mean for politics as we look forward?
I think it challenges whatever the agenda is, because there's such a slim majority that you can have a small number that can say, we'd like something different. And it really puts them in a bind. It won't make a huge difference, though, because you've got a Democrat Senate. So if you had a Republican House that was in its current situation and a Republican Senate, and you had them holding up the process, I think it could have a huge impact. But the truth is, even when the House passes something, like they've just passed today immediately the IRS bill, we're going to limit funding for new IRS agents, we're going to limit the investigative powers, we're going to stop all these audits of the little guy out there. It doesn't matter. It's not going to pass in the Senate. It's certainly not going to be signed by Biden. It's a symbolic gesture. So whether that passed or got held up won't really make any difference in what becomes law. So I think if anything, it sets a pattern for the years to come. 2 years from now, if the House can say, if the Republicans in the House can say, well, we did X, Y, and Z. We voted to stop the IRS, or we voted to lower taxes, or we voted, even if they didn't become law, they're setting an agenda for the election of 2024. That's the biggest impact they have. And I think your conservative wing wants to make sure they have a voice in that process.
Let me ask you about the chutzpah. Google it, where it's the chutzpah of Matt Gaetz, Representative Matt Gaetz, who was trolling Kevin McCarthy,
right,
saying, why are you housed in the Speaker's office right now? You don't deserve it. You're not the Speaker. Nobody should be in that house.
It was kind of brilliant.
So, I mean, it was an incredibly brilliant move on Matt. I mean, this was a Republican caucus member challenging Kevin McCarthy. He said, move your stuff
because
out of that.
Because he wanted to differentiate himself, right? Here's the establishment. Here's me and my friends. We want to break the establishment once and for all. In fact, I got a fundraising email from Andy Biggs saying as much. Let's break the establishment once and for all. They had this angst. It was not just about embarrassment. They really thought they could break it. And what, you know, people have been saying, our founders would have loved this. Oh, democracy playing out and it's messy and, you know, battles and stuff. No, I don't think they would have. I love the founding fathers, by the way. But I don't think they wanted this tiny little group to have so much power.
But our founding fathers didn't have C-SPAN. They didn't have the visuals.
Yeah.
They didn't have
didn't see the almost fist fight.
There was a performative side of this.
Yeah.
I mean, because I often read about early American history. These were basically backroom deals negotiated
playing out right in front of us.
All men, frankly, all men, all men that were
but
involved
if you
this.
Go back to the origins of the United States, when there were going to be 13 states to start, there was a lot of this type horse trading that there were one or two small states that were just folding their arms saying, we're not going to go along unless we are taken care of as well. So this is nothing new in the world of politics.
But the horse trading you alluded to, right? These concessions he made. These were concessions because he needed this speakership.
Absolutely.
It was already a once-in-a-century embarrassment, as it's been called many times.
I mean, I just want to remind our audience, and then we'll go to Chuck Schumer, but our audience, 1856, count how many years ago that was, Nathaniel Banks was elected Speaker of the House after 133 ballots. It was
Wild.
The same year that a South Carolina senator caned and took a beautiful, brutal caning of a senator from Massachusetts who spoke out against slaveholders and nearly killed that senator on the floor of the Senate. So in historic retrospective, this was nothing compared to that.
Yeah. I want to be very careful because terms matter, words matter. When you say it was an embarrassment, it's not an embarrassment.
No.
I think of a couple of years ago, the first time that Donald Trump was impeached. That was in January of that year. In November of that year, it was mentioned literally zero times during election season. That was 10 months later. Mm-hmm. That was the impeachment of a president, and it had essentially been forgotten. It was cast aside. There were other issues they had, but there were. And so the idea that this is an embarrassment, it was like an awkward moment, but it has no historical impact other than
Trump. Let's go to Chuck Schumer for a minute. Let's bring Chuck Schumer's comment. You know, he has a nice tweet up. He's still using Twitter. But Chuck Schumer writes, Speaker McCarthy's dream job could turn into a nightmare for the American people. To get the votes, he surrendered to demands of a fringe element of the GOP. Americans want Congress to build on the historic bipartisan achievements from the last 2 years, not more gridlock.
If you're going to quote Schumer, you just got to slide your glasses down.
Say that again?
Yeah, if you're going to quote Schumer, you got to slide your glasses down.
But to the point here, you know, I think the question is, you know, if you look at the last 2 years and the power of Joe Manchin as a swing vote in the Senate, I've done shows with various commentators that began calling Joe Manchin President Manchin.
Oh, yeah.
Did that example basically give ideas in part to the renegade GOP members to say, we need to go from being looked at as the fringe of the Republican Party to being central and mainstream to the choices of the Republican Party? Is that what we saw happen?
Well, I definitely think a page out of Joe Manchin's playbook is what we saw, right? In a way, I'm from West Virginia, and I know Joe Manchin now more than half my life. And I've seen him come up, and people say he's being a contrarian just to be a contrarian. I'm like, no, at the end of the day, when you've been in the seat that Joe Manchin's been in as long as he's been in, it's about legacy. It's about what you're standing up for. And I did see a bit of that come out on the floor this past week from Republicans like Matt Gaetz, who I don't traditionally agree with. But there were things he mentioned on the floor, such as special interests, term limits. Those things are actually palatable to us younger Republicans.
So what did the fringe embrace that you feel like is actually something that's a legitimate issue that resonates with citizens?
I think the term limits, absolutely.
So explain to our audience.
So term limits, you know, the fact that these members sit there and the incumbent enjoys so much advantage, right? But we don't talk about getting them term limited out after a certain amount of years in Congress. Mm. Maybe that's something we ought to be talking about. Getting certain people, such as Speaker McCarthy's Leadership Political Action Committee, not to play in certain open, safe primaries. Mm. That's another concession he made. I think that's fair because then maybe that will quell some of the infighting that's happening. I go back to the Speaker McCarthy, well, now Speaker McCarthy, when he was Paul Ryan, the former Republican Speaker's right hand. Mm. And I was a young congressional aide. And I really felt that here's a guy, Speaker Ryan, who wanted to be a policy guy. He wanted to do all the policy stuff. He didn't have an appetite for any of the dirty political games because Kevin McCarthy was playing them for him. So I say embarrassment because Kevin McCarthy now is so weakened. He wanted to start out this new year. Let's talk investigations. Of course, he told us that for many months that we're going to do investigations. But he also did want to legislate. I do think at this point in his life, he did want to come out and do some legislating on issues like the economy, tackling inflation, immigration, energy because of what's happening from Russia to Ukraine. You know, these kinds of things are important conversations. I do think McCarthy was ready to step into the speakership talking about some solutions. But after this past week of not just awkwardness, I must admit, I don't agree. But I think this has really weakened his power and also begs the question, can he even last 2 years? I don't think he can.
Well, Tim, let me ask you, one of the things that Kevin McCarthy agreed to, which I find hard to believe he did, was called the motion to vacate. And what I will explain to our audience, the motion to vacate means that a member of the House of Representatives at any moment can stop the business of the House of Representatives and call essentially for a confidence vote in the Speaker. And potentially, if they and call for a vote to see whether the Speaker has confidence, turning it more into a parliament in a way, and basically end that. And to some degree, you can imagine situations which, you know, AOC has been having fun explaining on Twitter that to keep Kevin McCarthy in, the Democrats may have to come to save him now and then. So tell us about that fragility and where you, whether you think that's healthy for the country and healthy for the legislative branch of government.
Sure, and I'm going to combine your last two questions. So when you asked about Joe Manchin and then your question there is, I think if you look at the short but storied history of the Freedom Caucus, is this is where they've been from in their entire existence. When Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows started the Freedom Caucus, they had some very specific goals in mind. And if you remember the John Boehner era, it was Mark Meadows who spearheaded that at risk to his own career at the time. It's easy in retrospect to say, ooh, look what he... But if that didn't work, Mark Meadows was essentially done in Washington. Right. And so Mark Meadows spearheaded that along with the members of the Freedom Caucus and pushed Boehner out the door as speaker and then brought in Paul Ryan. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you say, you know, is this new, is this dangerous, the methodology is new, but where the Freedom Caucus has been historically and the fact that they'd like to keep things on a fairly conservative but legislative agenda, and none of that is new. None of that. So their tactics may be a little different. And, you know, does it open some potential worms as far as someone being able to bring it up? Let's say you've got 10 members of the Republican Party who are ready to vote no confidence in Kevin. I guarantee you there's going to be 212, soon to be 213 Democrats that'll say, sure, we don't have confidence in him either. And so
he's gone at that point.
Yeah.
And then we have this all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, so there is a fragility that's now been baked in.
Yeah.
But I
also think on behind the scenes, because everything will not play out on the television cameras in that scenario. So behind the scenes with that threat there, then perhaps you have a more cohesive Republican Party that is trying to publicly show they're on the same line. And if someone veers off, if the speaker veers off or otherwise, behind the scenes, that threat exists constantly. Wait a minute, we could make life very difficult and you can bring them back
on. How much of the agenda now, and I ask to both of you, is now going to be one of investigating Joe Biden, investigating Hunter Biden? We just had the revelations that in Joe Biden's private office, the University of Pennsylvania office on here in Washington, D.C., that they found classified documents. That is, you know, opened up this Pandora's box of, well, if he had classified documents, Donald Trump had classified documents, what's the big deal? Or why don't you treat them both simultaneously? I'm just interested in whether in a world where you've got divided government, whether or not that kind of investigating the investigators from the last 2 years becomes essentially what we see every day in the Congress.
I had this conversation with Jim Jordan back in maybe September.
Jim Jordan is the Republican whip right now.
Judiciary chair, and who would be in charge of most of those investigations. I had this very conversation because it seems as though over the last couple of years, between January 6th or between any number of other issues, the two impeachments and so on, that legislative agenda got set aside in favor of what the public perceives anyway as a political agenda. And I said to Congressman Jordan, you cannot ignore, I realize you can't ignore if there's evidence that is clear in Hunter's laptop, okay, but that really shouldn't be front and center, in my opinion. That should not be front and center. If you need to do that investigation, great, but please don't make that the headline every day, because the public then just believes you're...
And did he agree with you?
...doing the same thing. You know, kind of.
But I say 70-30.
Yeah.
I think they're going to do a heck of a lot of investigating, 70%, 30%, and maybe passing some good legislation that the American people want them. You know, I think a lot about people born after 1981, because I'm one of those people, and how we feel about today's Republican Party. We're upset with Biden because we feel like this administration hasn't been able to walk and chew gum. And particularly inflation. I mean, young families like mine, I've got a baby under the age of 1 year old. Mm. I went through the baby formula shortage stuff. It happened twice. It happened last spring. Again, it was still happening last fall for me. And then just the price of daily commodities on the shelf.
Right.
It feels like the Biden administration doesn't want to address that for us. Okay.
Right.
So that's one thing. So we're like, okay, Republicans, do what you always do. Help us fix the economy. Come up with some solutions. But then it's always like Hunter Biden's laptop. It's like, guys, let's get serious about doing... Let's focus on three issue areas.
So, Rena, you had founded, when Donald Trump and Biden were going at it in the past, Republicans for Biden.
Republican women for Biden.
Women for Biden. Have tectonics changed enough now that you're now a critic of Biden and ready to be supportive of the Republican
Party? They changed almost right away, Steve. That was kind of wild for me. And it was in that way, you know, look, I felt that Biden was the better choice at that time. I just didn't want to see Trump in the White House again. I felt he's a threat to the democracy as I've come to know it. Also, as a child of immigrants, this just isn't the stuff my parents came to this country for. I felt there was a lot of othering. It was very hypocritical in nature. And that's why I said, okay, you know what? Biden is the better choice of the two to me. But right away, I could see this administration's policies weren't going to serve the arena that came up through Republican politics and served two Republican members of Congress at a time the Tea Party was coming to power. Right. And I remember first meeting those very first activists from the Tea Party era in the 2009. They were very simple people that were just really feeling misrepresented by Washington. They felt like our representatives weren't doing enough for us. They weren't speaking to our kitchen table issues. And there was a bit of a frustration with both parties, but obviously more so with Democrats. What I see now is that both sides want to just hate the other side. The demonization of the Democrats by Republicans is not a good playbook. It's not a long-term playbook. But what I also don't see is the seriousness about doing the kitchen table issue sometimes. Right. I had hoped the Freedom Caucus could speak to that a little bit better, but also they're a bit mixed up. They're not, I mean, they all didn't vote against McCarthy. Right. A lot of them were with McCarthy. Right. And then those four holdouts at the end who gave a present vote, and then six present votes essentially made McCarthy speaker, those people are not giving me any confidence that they can help the Republican Party do the issues that'll serve, speak on the issues, legislate in a way that speaks to Americans' concerns, particularly those of us with really young families.
You made such a great comment in there about how, and I think this is completely accurate. People perceive, you and I both perceive, that there's an active effort to just hate each other.
Yes.
These guys are the bad guys. No, these guys are the bad guys. And I grew up in a different era than you, and I grew up in the state of Maine. Mm. But we had, when I was a kid, we had Bill Cohen was the Republican senator, George Mitchell.
Who worked for a Democratic administration.
That's where I was going, was the Democrat. Mm. But both of them could work. I mean, Bill Cohen used to work with Gary Hart all the time. They would work on legislation together. George Mitchell later became head of the Senate, but could work across the aisle very easily. It was an era where it can happen. It's not going to happen on every issue, and they had distinct, but they didn't hate each other. They weren't bad guys because they were on the other team. And I'm not sure how we get beyond that. People talk about, you know, was Trump the guy? Trump clearly wasn't the guy to bring people together. But who is? You know, when I look at the potential candidates for 2024, your question earlier to her about, you know, are you ready to come back and support someone other than Biden? It depends on who that person is, I'm guessing.
Right. It does depend,
Some of them have better leadership and better uniting qualities than others.
And when I was sort of reading Kevin McCarthy's statements recently, and he was sort of talking about, you know, going after wokeness in schools and looking at some of the big questions that are out there, whether it's, you know, budget responsibility and fiscal conservatism and dealing with the debt limit. We have big issues out there on Ukraine and Ukraine funding, which has been controversial within the GOP circle. I could make a long list of topics that there is no seeming consensus inside the Republican Party. What do you predict for Kevin McCarthy dealing with real substantive issues, say like Ukraine?
I think there's more unity than you might give credit for. I think there's some fair questions. None of them are black and white, of course. When you say we've given X number of dollars, you know, boy, that's a lot, then it is a lot of money. But when you say, do we want to support someone who's been invaded by Russia, you know, and that's the question, that was the polling question, 90% of America says, of course we want to support them. So you got to kind of find that balance. All right, where is that money going? Who's getting it? How's it being used? And is it responsible? And I think there was, in my perception, there was some of the expenditures, some of the votes to spend money on Ukraine was done as a knee-jerk reaction that, well, we got to do something. And they didn't know specifically what they were doing with that, but it was a gesture. Okay, we're helping our friend. We're helping a fight against Russia. And so some of those, I think, sorting it out amongst the party as to, yeah, we want to help Ukraine, but do we need to help this much? Where's that money going? Is it actually getting where it's intended to go? You know, those are all fair questions.
Let me ask you both as we're getting close to the other program, and I hesitate to ask this, but I have to. You know, when Kevin McCarthy basically wins by a vote, which is what he ended up winning by, then every vote matters. But one of the votes for him was this gentleman. Tell us about this guy.
There are almost no words.
I just want to explain to our audience. Representative George Santos won his election in New York's third congressional district, and basically came in and said he was Jewish from a family of Holocaust survivors, basically Brazilian, Eastern European, and you know, just basically came out of nowhere with a lot of fabricated elements.
Right.
Was gay, et cetera. That turns out to be real.
Well, said but, he went to college.
One of my colleagues at Semaphore, you know, interviewed him and said, "How's it all going for you?" And he says, "Well, I've lost 6 pounds up here with all this runaround going on." But George Santos was fabricated. But when you look at that photo, and which we just took down, but there's now a controversy over whether or not he's showing a white power signal, you know, with his left hand down there. I'm just trying to understand the meaning and purpose of George Santos, and why can't Kevin McCarthy basically come out and discipline or frame the conversation about someone who obviously had a fraudulent track to his position?
Well, Republicans hold such a narrow majority in the House, and this is the guy who flipped the seat from Democrat to Republican.
Wow.
That is the issue here. They don't want to lose this seat. I think it's going to get to a point where this guy has to be let out in handcuffs. I really think it's going to take a legal law enforcement move for this guy to leave Congress, because he lied about his college education. He said he went to NYU and Baruch College, and he didn't do that. He never graduated from college. I mean, the fact that he also
Which
lied
is nothing wrong with not graduating from college.
There's nothing wrong with that, but
there
to
is something
lie
wrong
about
with lying.
It. No. Exactly. And then saying you worked at Citigroup and Goldman Sachs, you also didn't work at those places. We've never seen a political scandal like this. There's no parallels in modern history. This guy is just a con.
But
Tim, they can't afford to lose him, Steve.
Yeah, you both know all these people. And Tim, I know you know now Speaker McCarthy well, and you know so many of the players. But one of the latest revelations is that George Santos's fundraising director actually impersonated the chief of staff to Kevin McCarthy in his fundraising efforts. Does this not make any heads explode in senior GOP circles?
Yeah, I think if you want to maintain any semblance of integrity, you have to discipline him to the greatest legal extent. You know, I don't know that Kevin has the ability to say, "I'm sorry, I you know, you're not a member of Congress," but he does have the ability to not place him on any committees, to really limit what he can do. And I think in order to save face, you need to do that.
And also allow for a vote for censure, perhaps, too.
Absolutely.
They could go that far in the House. They can vote to censure
You simply
him.
Can't have someone that lies their way into credit. Yeah. You know, there
or
are
otherwise,
occasional...
somebody's always going to be impersonating the chief of staff to Kevin McCarthy, right? Because you've given them a, you know, a green flag.
There you go. No, there's always, you know, there's the occasional person that has something on their resume that wasn't accurate or was inflated, and we give them a hard time. There's members of the Senate that have done that. But to have virtually everything on your biography fabricated, you are a fictional character.
They're not just embellishments.
Yeah,
these are flat-out lies. And
then
I think he misled the
you
public.
You shouldn't be serving in the United States Congress.
I agree.
Well, I want to thank you. What a fun discussion about insider GOP politics. Republican strategist Rena Shaw and Tim Constantine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
So what's the bottom line? We're in for a wild 2 years full of fireworks between Democrats and Republicans and nasty battles inside both parties. It comes down to simple math. The Republicans hold 222 seats in a House of Representatives that needs 218 votes to get anything done. Well, when you're trying to pass laws on super divisive issues like abortion or gay rights or assault weapons, aid to Ukraine, borders, immigration, and all sorts of other matters, where there's no agreement inside any party, how is it going to add up? The answer is it doesn't. Congress is full of opinionated, strong personalities, and it will be nearly impossible to get a majority to agree on anything. To make things worse, the rules have just changed so that just one member can call for an immediate vote on whether the Speaker of the House should keep his job or not. Kevin McCarthy will have a proverbial gun to his head every time Congress is in session. But he desperately wanted the job. So, congratulations, Kevin. And that's the bottom line.